know what really makes us mad? Is wasting money on CDs with only one or two good songs.
Yeah. Tell them about punk!
What's up, posers? Welcome to Punk Lotto Pod. I am your co-host, Justin Hensley.
And I am your other co-host, Dylan Hensley.
And today we are joined by Megan Simon of the band Bad Sandy. They just released their self-titled EP in 2020. And it's a really fun record. It's like a very upbeat, poppy, kind of garagey, power pop, you know, fun stuff.
Rock and roll.
Yeah. What are we talking about today?
We are talking about the 2005 album Everything in Transit by Jax Mannequin. Kind of a departure for our show.
First two episodes of 2021 and they're already like major departures for
yeah.
sonically for what we talk about.
Yeah, really one of those records that's on the very fringe of punk. You know, rightfully included, I think, because of Andrew McMahon's previous band and obviously their association with the whole Warped Tour, Fuse, everything that we're going to get into on this episode. So if you're only familiar with Dark Blue, you'll be surprised, I think, as we were. But
yeah, and you can follow us on all forms of social media. We're on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, at PunkLottoPod. We have an email address. It's PunkLottoPod@gmail.com. We have a voicemail line. It's 202-688-PUNK. We have a Substack. Dylan, tell us about the Substack.
Go subscribe to punklottopod.substack.com to get your lucky numbers on a hopefully weekly basis. You'll get some record reviews, whatever other random thing I decide to spend too long researching and writing, and maybe some additional show notes type stuff. But yeah, go check that out
and enjoy our conversation with Megan Simon from Bad Sandy.
To whom I seem to keep someone I'm no one to. Who am I
Oh, so the whole paid protester thing was just a complete projection.
Yeah, it was an idea.
Well, that's what the right does. Like, everything they object to happening is what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's always been that way.
Good thing Uncle Joe's here to fix it all.
He's the lead Antifa. Oh, he's going to be so moderate. It's going to be...
Oh, boy.
He's going to have to spend the first, like, half of his term just undoing things. Just repealing Trump orders and waste his time doing all that. Not to mention, yeah, impeachment is going to be time-consuming for Congress. And then he's just going to, Joe's just going to go and pardon him.
Fix it all.
Yeah, he's just going to pardon him at the end to heal our divided country.
Yes. Yeah.
He keeps talking about it's time to come together. It's like, well, okay, if you take the two extremes, the one that wants to kill, any non-white person and lib, and then the other side, I guess, of the Democratic Party, it's just to be like, give corporations a pass.
Yeah.
It's still now just like a, now they don't want to kill us as badly, not as out about it.
Yeah, they'll do it in more discreet ways.
Yeah. Through legislature.
Through poverty, baby.
You're in New Hampshire?
Mm-hmm. Suburb, very suburby where we are.
Yeah. Is it, what's the nearest well-known city to you? It's pretty small, I guess. They're kind of all...
Yeah, I guess Manchester is, like, the biggest city, and that's, like, 30 minutes away. So, not so bad. And we're an hour from Boston.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. There's, like, a grouping of states up there that's just, like, they're all so small.
So similar. I'm from Texas originally, and then I lived in Los Angeles, and so moving out here is just like, oh my gosh, you can drive for an hour and have driven through like three states.
Yeah, like where I live, if I want to drive to the beach, it's 5 hours,
Yeah, exactly.
I can drive an hour from where I live now and still be seeing exit signs that are like 340th Avenue. It's like, why? I'm in the middle of the desert out here. Why did you continue the numbering system this far?
What were your goals? Yeah, the move from Texas to California, like 2 days was just Texas.
Yeah.
Yeah, we drove. I helped him.
You probably went 10 across Texas,
yep,
right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
I helped Dylan move and we took, what, 40?
Yeah. And 40 so, goes through the top part. So that was just like, that was the same as like Oklahoma or Arkansas.
Oh, yeah.
Is that considered a panhandle in Texas? That weird like square on top of the...
Yeah, I think they call it
the panhandle. Yeah, we would call it the panhandle.
It's just not as visibly... It's a short panhandle.
Yeah, a big pan, small handle. Mm-hmm. Really unwieldy.
It's not efficient for cooking.
No.
Burn your hands very often. So you're from Texas. Did you move to LA to do comedy?
I did, yeah. So I was doing improv and musical comedy and stuff like that in Austin, sketch and stuff. And I was doing that for, I guess, 6 years. And then I made the move to LA to attempt it. And now I'm in New Hampshire doing music. Things changed.
What was the decision to go to New Hampshire, of all places?
It was... truly just to be Bad Sandy. I met George, who is our guitarist, through some comedy friends. He'd been living in LA with his wife Kate for a really long time. He moved back and we got in touch to talk about music stuff, and he was like, you should come out here and record an album with my friend Andrew and I. And I did that, spent a week here, came back a month later to do some touring, and then, like, truly while I was on tour, I was like, okay, I have to move there and do this all the time. Like, this is the only thing I ever want to do again. So, yeah, moved in with Kate and George, and then just started rehearsing and have been here doing the damn thing.
Nice. Did you have any, like, I guess you did musical theater. I was going to say, did you have any, like, other musical experience? Were you in any other bands before Bad Sandy?
This is my first band, but I got a guitar when I was 11. My grandma made me take classes at her senior center for an embarrassing summer. And that led to, like, Death Cab covers in my room and, like, YouTube videos for a while. And, yeah, like I said, like, then doing the musical theater and the musical comedy thing, like, more and more I was just like, I want what I do to be song-based, but I'm not in touch with what my deal is yet enough to be able to do that in a way that isn't very jokey and with a wall up.
I was trying to think of, like, guitar comedians. It's like you were trying to be...
Flight of the Conchords was, like, the biggest... Like,
yeah, when we had, what,
I heard of them, Martin. I was like, oh my god, you can do that? Yeah, Dimitri Martin, Garfunkel and Oates.
Yeah.
There was that other guy who... He had that song about his brother being Jesus, but he's the devil. I'm fucking Craig! I cannot name that person, but I'll Google it after this.
That was Steven something?
I feel like, yeah, or maybe something with the
G. Was it Stephen Lynch?
Oh, that sounds right.
I think that's probably him.
Comic.
I'm sure there's a ton of them, especially like doing like the Midwest circuit that are like terrible.
Yeah, there's a lot of really bad ones.
It's like, you need to be good at both comedy and a guitar to be able to pull it off well, and it's already hard enough to do one of those things.
Truly, yeah. I made all of the guitar stuff as simple as possible, just to never have to think about it. But that's why, like, Flight of the Conchords is very sick, is because they're, like, super great musicians, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're definitely talented songwriters as well. That helps a lot.
Yeah, definitely.
So what was it about? It was just, like, playing in a band was just, like, what you wanted. Like, once you did it, it was more of what you realized you wanted to do than comedy?
Yeah, well, I had been writing, like, the batch of songs that's now a reward for the bare minimum, and I just didn't have an outlet for them, and... I had been, like, kind of weaning myself off of comedy already at that point. Started writing these, like, non-joke-based songs. And then we started the recording process with all of that in mind. And just the way that they communicated and were able to, like, put into a language that I could understand, like, what I was trying to go for. I don't know. It was just this thing of, like, oh, like, you can have a little... team of people, and you can, like, I am not the most skilled musician in the band, and I feel, like, really, like, humbled and, like, grateful that, like, these guys wanted to work with me at all, and that, like, we can continue to do stuff together. I don't know, it was really just the collaborative aspect of it that I was like, I would much rather live in New Hampshire and dedicate all of my time to building this thing with these people than to go back to LA and what, like, maybe try to find people who want to be in a band. But, like, it was like, that seems like so much work to get to the thing that I can already do. Like, I have that in front of me. It just means moving across the country and living in a place with a long winter. And that's okay. I'm tough-ish.
I was going to say, yeah, I guess the collaborative nature of it. That's, you know, like, Dylan and I were in a band together, and I played bass, and I was not an actual, like, musician in any way. I was just, like, the guitarist told me what to play, which is fine. That's literally all I wanted, because I never wanted to practice. I never wanted to do all this stuff on my own to actually get good.
Yeah,
I just liked hanging out. I just liked hanging out.
Yeah, it's just, what a nice space to be in, like, a group of people making sounds together. Like, who wouldn't want to just make some noise, clanks, if you will.
That was the main enjoyment I got of it, because then I tried to start, like, a little thing with one other guy, and neither one of us were good enough musicians to, like, actually, like, write music, and we didn't have a drummer, and so it was just like, this is hard.
Yeah.
Just want to hang out and not play any instruments.
Yeah, it's very nice getting to come to a practice and be like, here are chords and here's a vocal melody. Can you please tell me what to do from here? Can we please add some spicy little flavors on top of that? Because I've got G, I've got D, I've got A, you name it. I've got those 3 to 4 chords all the time.
There's a lot you can do with just a few chords.
Yeah.
You can write so many songs with the same exact chords. It's great.
Bad Sandy just released their self-titled EP last year, 2020. It's one of my favorite EPs of 2020. How's the reaction been to it?
First of all, thank you. Second, the reaction has been really positive. I don't know, the response has been really good. We definitely have more people listening than we ever have before, like on a regular basis. I'm like, dang, like 31 people in one day, like from different places. That's wild. AP just listed us as like an upcoming pop punk band. And that is a sentence I never thought that I would get to say. So yeah, it's just been super positive. And the people who were really excited about the first record, I was like kind of nervous like releasing the EP, just because to me it's like a wildly different sound. I don't know if it is, but it feels like it to me. And I was like, I hope this isn't like pushing people away who are like, this is going to be too high energy. I like, I really signed up for the like garage rock girl stuff, and now it seems like we're a little pissed. but it's been really great, and people have been like, love to see this progression, and like that's been the coolest thing of all.
Yeah, I listened to the first one too, because I was already familiar with the new EP, and I was like, well, I need to make sure I like get the whole discography picture. And I noticed there is a big change in the first EP, first release, whatever you want to call it, to the new one. Did that come from just having more people playing with you, or was it just a conscious decision to write something more like pop centric?
A little bit of both. So with the first record, it was truly like just me, George, and Andrew being like, let's figure these songs out. And I think that I didn't have a lot of the language and knowledge necessary to be able to communicate exactly what I was looking for. And just working together on a weekly basis and like getting to know the kinds of music that I like, the things that I like really want to be leaning towards, learning the best way to communicate that, I think just lended itself to getting a sound that I've kind of always wanted to be putting out. Like, I definitely have always leaned to like pop punk music. I was so excited about getting the year 2005 because I was like, look at all these beauties. Such a formative time. So like, yeah, it was always wanting to kind of sound like poppier and faster and punk adjacent, just not really knowing how to get that across, and not being like, I'm a faster player now. I can write faster songs. Like, just stuff like that is, I don't know, doing comedy for so long, there were just all these things that as a musician I never took the time to learn, because I was like, I just need to use my basic guitar knowledge to get some jokes across. And now I'm like, I am writing a musical song. Like, so it should sound like music, and how do I get myself closer to that?
I forgot that you were mentioned on that AP Mag list, which is kind of cool. One, because it's such a, like a big, you know, name to be associated with. Yeah. But at the same time, too, AP isn't really known for going for like unknown bands or like bands with like just self-releasing stuff. Like, they tend to go for they're on a bigger label.
Yes. You know,
and they've had like 3 or 4 albums, and then they're like, oh, watch out for this band. It's like, I mean, <Right. laughs> they've been around for like 8 years, but
yeah, I'll watch out.
But then they always try, I guess they try and throw in like some cred type ones every once in a while, where it's like, yo, no, we know what we're talking about. We're not just appealing to the Warped Tour crowd.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that they're like, so cool to be on the ground floor of Bad Sandy. And they weren't just like New Hampshire bands.
Yeah. I was looking at, I was Googling Bad Sandy. And if you do that, all you get in the image section is pictures from Greece.
Yes.
Is the name a reference to the Good Sandy, Bad Sandy thing in that movie?
It is. My roommate in Los Angeles came into my room one night as I was getting primped for a date, and she said, well, don't you look like a little Bad Sandy? And from that point on, I was like, that would be a sick band name.
It is a great band name, because it's one of those band names that if you don't know the connection, you're not going to immediately make that connection, you know, on your own. So, and then it was just funny, because then it was like, people also search for Good Sandy and Bad Sandy costume. And I was like, huh? Olivia Newton-John, okay.
Yes. That's the only thing that I was like, oh yeah, I guess I only Googled it to see if other people had made, like, a band page for it. I didn't realize that the image section, I gotta up our image SEO, kind of get pics on our website with alternative text.
Any plans for new material? I know COVID kind of makes things a little difficult, but you're clearly in a room full of musical equipment now.
Yes, it's true. My computer's by all of the musical equipment, so I can't be too far away from it. Yes, definitely plans for new material. We've got a cover that is, I'm just figuring out the best way to release it, because when you don't have a team of PR specialists helping you do that, you're like, should I make a video? Is it weird to make a video for a cover song? Who's to say? And then I'm currently in the writing process, which has also become my first real, like, demoing process. This is the first time that I've had, like, studio equipment, which is just, like, a mic and an interface to be able to, like, okay, I can at least get this down. I can, like, those drums belong to Tim, our drummer, who is also my boyfriend. So rehearsal can be very, very simple. So, yeah, that's what we're working with down here right now.
That's good. I know a lot of bands have issues with, like, especially if they live in a bigger city, you know, people having to get tested and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's nice that you have the people nearby enough that it's not really that big of a deal for you to be able to.
Exactly. Yeah. And we're lucky, like, New Hampshire too. And everyone works jobs where they're either remote or they, like, get tested regularly anyway. So we've been lucky.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. I'm looking forward to what comes next for Bad Sandy. And I guess we can get into the regular format of the show.
Yes.
So the premise of our show is we assign our guests a year and they pick one punk, hardcore, emo, or punk adjacent record from that year. So we gave you 2005. Before we get into the record you actually picked, we'd like to ask, what did you almost pick to talk about?
So my first runner-up album selection was such a close runner-up that to this, like, right this second, if we were like, actually, let's talk about that, I would be like, yes. It was A Fever You Can't Sweat Out by Panic at the Disco. That one was too formative for a 15-year-old Megan.
Who knew that 15 years later, Panic would be the band that, like, is still active and still, like, is on the radio all the time?
Would be, yeah, would be a Vine meme, would be a band that middle schoolers today listen to. I remember being 15 and hearing that one song. Like, if you had told me then, this band is gonna be is still going to be huge in 15 years. I would have said, you're shitting me. Like, that's that's not possible.
And I would have been like,
it felt then like a one-hit wonder.
I would have been like, of course, this is the sound. This is the sound of the future. I had just never heard anything like it. And I still don't think that I could name anything like this record. It was so bizarre.
Yeah, because like the progression that Brandon Urie's music has taken, because he's pretty much the only consistent member, I think, is now it's just kind of like, well, that's what Maroon 5 sounds like now. Or
yeah.
So it's just funny to see that. It probably helped that they kind of laid low for a while, too. Like, they were always a band, but they weren't, like, on the radar like they are now. I guess they were just like, all right, we'll wait till Fall Out Boy breaks up again, and we'll take the spot.
Yeah, a good plan.
Speaking of Fall Out Boy, they released From Under the Cork Tree in 2005. Is that Sugar? Or is that the other album? Oh, their song titles are so long. Yeah, Sugar Going Down is that record, yeah.
Is that a little less 16 Candles, a little more Touch Me? Question mark.
That one. Yes, that's track 11, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, this was an album that, like, on my MySpace, and the HTML, where you could, like, put a playlist instead of just one song, like, that was in there.
God, I loved the customizable aspect of MySpace. Until you go to, like, somebody's page where it was, like, too much shit is on this page.
That was me. We had glittering profile graphics. We had playlist. We had GIFs. We had raining GIFs. We had a lot going on.
We had a neighbor, like, one of our only friends, his MySpace page was... He had some, like, super gory background picture, and then just, like, hundreds of awful pictures, all encoded, embedded into, like, his whole page, and it would just take 10 minutes to load the whole thing. And it's like, I just want to write on his wall.
Let's keep this vein of music going and talk about a little bit of... the other records that came out, Paramore put out All We Know Is Falling.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first full length, right? I have to check that.
I think so. Featuring the song Pressure, which the first time I ever heard was in Samoan on The Sims.
Really?
Yeah. In a Sims game, that song played, but obviously, like, they do the thing where they make it sound all crazy, like The Sims, and I had to Google it, and that was a hard time back then, but I did find it, and I did become a Paramore fan immediately. There's a big overlap with Sims players and people who like Paramore, I think.
I would have never guessed. I never got into The Sims, so that was... We didn't have a computer that was capable of playing anything like that.
We had, like, a big, like, gaming... Not, like, a gaming laptop. It was just, like, a shitty, like, someone's dad is a roofer laptop with, like, the little red nubbins in the middle.
The Lenovo with the little trackpad. I think that's what it's called, the trackpad.
There's also that little red rubber nubbins right in the center of the keyboard that, like, my uncle insisted was better than the trackpad.
Yeah. You try and just scroll over a little bit, and then it just rips across the screen. Like,
just tweaking this little laptop titty.
Yeah, it would just be like, I just need to slowly move it to the... Oh, fuck, it's at the bottom of the screen. This is an important year for us in the sense that I believe we were watching a lot of Fuse TV at the time.
Yes.
That friend we were mentioning, we would go to his house, and he had cable, and we didn't. So we would just be like, let's put on Fuse, because it was the only thing, like, playing music. And we'd sit through, like, these blocks of all of these albums. I specifically remember watching the 30 Seconds to Mars videos constantly, which they put out A Beautiful Lie that year, which I think has The Kill.
And it was from yesterday.
It's
I only know The Kill by name off of this record, so I don't know if
there were, like, two videos for this record. Yes. I know for sure
From Yesterday is the other one that you're thinking of, because those were the two that I
They have like really long interlude, like acting interludes in the middle of them.
Cause, face know, paint.
He's an actor, you know.
Eyeliner, face paint. Oh,
from yesterday is the one where he's like in like a Chinese Empire or something. Really problematic video where he's supposed to be some sort of like Shaolin warrior or something.
Yeah.
The kill was
the Shining one, right?
Shining ripoff, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which was so popular at that time. Every now and then, my wife and I will watch music videos from this time period, and it was so common to just like shot for shot recreate like some big movie. Like there's the Saving Private Ryan, My Chemical Romance video, and there's a couple other ones where it's like this is just a direct remake of a movie. Like it was interesting what those bands decided to do with their budgets.
In that same vein, All American Rejects released Move Along that year, which that had Dirty Little Secret and Move Along. Gosh.
I knew a girl from my high school who kissed Tyson Ritter at a Warped Tour, and I was so jealous. I was like, I would have died, and I'm mad that I didn't get to die after kissing Tyson Ritter.
Which one's he?
Also, she was 16, high school girl. Like, looking back, I was like, no one should have liked that.
Oh, man, I wish this adult man would kiss me. How old is he now?
How old was he then?
Better.
Oh, he's born in 84. So, let's see. In 2005, he would have been 21, depending on when in April. So, Warped Tour.
But it made for a really cool default pick.
There's, of course, tons of other records that came out that year. Dylan, if you had to pick one to talk about, if it was your choice, what would you have picked?
I think probably one of the most listened to records off of this list for me would be Alaska by Between the Buried and Me. No one's picked anything like that yet on this show, and we need to find some like new school metalcore kids to come on and pick something like that. Other than that, though, more in line with the album that we are talking about, Commit This to Memory by Motion City Soundtrack. That's a all-time favorite for me.
That's a perfect record. Like, so good. It's so funny. I think I tweeted about this on New Year's, too. I was like, it's time for my yearly tradition of listening to Commit This to Memory on New Year's Day. Because there's two songs about New Year's on that record. And someone else, Susie True, who we just spoke with last week, they tweeted, or they posted on Instagram, like a line from the album. And I was like, and then I, of course, repeated the next line after. And like, oh, I'm so glad somebody got that. So I assume there's some other people that consider that an important record. I don't really care about any of their other albums, though. 05, I'm trying to remember what I was listening to back then. I was listening to Anne Berlin, Never Take Friendship Personal. That came out in 05. I remember buying that year on CD. And then we had Norma Jean's Oh God, The Aftermath.
How about Chiodos, All's Well That Ends Well? That was my second runner-up.
That was a weird band. They were really odd. They were doing something. I feel like they were trying to do something that was beyond their actual capabilities. I think they were trying to do something like the Mars Volta or something a little smarter. I mean, they did, but then also wanting to have like just like sick palm mute breakdowns.
Yeah. This album was sick, and I got into it because a boy at improv camp had a Chiodos shirt, and so I like that night went home and was like, what is Chiodos? And from then on I was like, oh, it turns out I'm sick. I think this is cool, and screaming's awesome, and I'm 15. I haven't been kissed, but I'm sure that this is the ticket to it.
This'll do it. really takes me back. Like, looking at the continuing down this list and looking at everything, I'm like, well, yeah, I remember that. I remember that.
Yeah. This is a peak nostalgia years.
Mm-hmm. There was a Cartel record that year. Was that the year they were in the bubble?
Yeah, the Dr. Pepper bubble on MTV. You better believe I watched that.
Well, didn't something controversial happen with that? Did they come out early?
I think they had to leave it early, but I don't remember why.
Gosh, I wish I could
have a researcher on this.
Like, what the reason was why they left the bubble?
What happened in the Dr. Pepper bubble? And could that be a solution to curing COVID-19?
Yeah, they were predicting the future is what they were doing.
Dr. Pepper should sponsor every household with a bubble.
A glass bubble. No, that was in 07 when that happened. Huh, I feel like that was earlier than that.
Are you calling this website a liar?
Well, let's see. And then on June 12th, the group left the bubble and performed a 45-minute set outside it. I don't remember. It was live streamed. It was like Big Brother type thing.
Yes, it was. They were just living in it.
Yeah.
They're just some guys.
At the end of this article, it's like, however, he later admitted that the event was a marketing stunt. Who didn't think that was a marketing stunt? What was the supposed reason behind going into a bubble?
Yeah, like it wasn't like a scientific experiment.
Yeah. We're recreating Biodome.
Yeah.
Just doing the Stanford experiment for all of us to DVR. Half of the guys were guards.
That band has had a ton of musicians as well. Good lord. Oh, this is on this record. I pulled up the 07 record with the bubble. That's what happened.
Which one has, like, Honest? Oh, they did a really good... I have to monitor that sentence. I was going to say, they did a really good Wonderwall cover, but I'm not sure if that's true anymore. I just remember at the time thinking that.
Honestly, it was on this record, Chroma.
Okay, yes. Which means color in Greek, by the way.
Named their album that, so, you know, they're extra smart.
Oh, you can't just Google Cartel, by the way.
Yeah. What do you mean they're not the number one thing you think of when you say the word cartel anymore?
I tried to Google Cartel bubble, and like on the first page of Google results, there's like El Chapo stuff.
How cartels are handling the COVID outbreaks. Yeah. They're all living in bubbles when they cut up their cocaine. And yeah, I feel like we go down these lists forever. Let's talk about the record you did pick. So, we gave you 2005, and you picked Jack's Mannequin, Everything in Transit. Jack's Mannequin formed in 2004 and from Orange County, California. This was released on August 23rd in 2005 on Maverick Records. And the personnel on this record is Andrew McMahon on piano and vocals, with additional personnel Jim Wirt on bass and guitar, Tommy Lee, Yes, Tommy Lee from Motley Crue on drums, and Robert Anderson on guitar, who was in Something Corporate along with Andrew McMahon. And the record was produced by Andrew and Jim, and self-recorded for the most part. Well, self-funded for the most part.
Yeah,
this record was recorded without a label, and then was shopped later. He was actually on Geffen Records because of Something Corporate, and then they went on hiatus or broke up or something there, and he didn't want to release this record on that label, so he got out of it somehow. I'm not entirely sure how he got out of it, but then signed to Maverick. It's like, I don't understand, you went from Geffen to Maverick, but, I mean, it's like a weird lateral move to me.
I think it was probably, I would suspect, from what I read about the Something Corporate breakup or hiatus or whatever that preceded this album, I would suspect that it had to do with that, and probably the expectations for promoting the record, because they were really burned out as a band. So he was probably trying to avoid that situation, wanted to go for someone smaller who wouldn't have as high of expectations, because they had toured with, they had like a co-headlining tour with like Yellow Card, and they supported The Offspring,
Panic at the Disco.
So I would not be surprised if he wanted to go to a smaller label for that reason.
Is Maverick a smaller label, though? That's Madonna's record label.
Yeah, I guess probably a different expectation. I don't know.
Though Maverick did have a couple other like punky bands. Like they had Story of the Year, Stutterfly, Goldfinger, Mest. Remember Mest? But then they also had like Alanis Morissette and Madonna. I mean,
yeah, it also could have just been like, I don't like the A&R guy at Geffen.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, it could have totally been personal beef, and it was just like, I don't want them to. Or it could have been financial. I mean, who knows what they owed to Geffen.
That's true.
How much? I mean, he did choose to fund the recording of this record himself, so.
Which means he had to have some money saved away from his time in Something Corporate.
Yeah, I was really interested in it. I read that he had put like $40,000 of his own money into this record, which I have never had $40,000. So I don't know where he got that money. Maybe rich parents or tons of debt.
Yeah, he's from Orange County originally. And so that could go like very much one of two ways, rich parents wise.
Yeah, it very easily could just be, yeah, from rich parents. And I mean, he got Tommy Lee to play on this record, which is so weird.
I read that was because they had done a session together, or like he had like seen Andrew McMahon. It was some weird thing like that where like Tommy Lee wanted a session with him.
Yeah. And I think I read something that like Andrew sessioned on something that Tommy Lee was involved with, I think.
Yes. I think that was it.
So I imagine if he's doing session work, he was probably doing okay at that point.
Yeah, that's true.
Before we get too much further, I love to ask our guests, what made you pick this record specifically?
So this was a record that I felt, to me personally, was more timeless than maybe like A Fever You Can't Sweat Out. There are like two very distinct time periods where this album was important to me. One of them being like when I was a teenager, and then the other one being when I lived in California. Like it was very much like a, I don't know, but that would sound kind of cool while I'm on Venice Beach. And then just got really into it again. And like at the beginning part of my move, this was just like a comforting album to me. So this one felt very close to the heart.
Did you have this album when it was new, or did you hear it around that time period?
I heard it around 2006 because of Fuse. That's when the Dark Blue video aired back then. And yeah, that just got me, like, that was the MySpace song. Like, I wasn't an album person yet. I didn't understand that concept because I was getting music from like the radio and from music videos. It's just like, oh, there are some cool singles, I'll put it on a playlist and that'll be that. And then when I was like 15 and got like an iTunes account, then I was like, I do want the full thing. So it came a little bit later to get the full picture of it.
Yeah, I think my introduction to Jack's Mannequin was the Dark Blue video on Fuse as well. It's funny, I have two distinct, like, beginning points for this band in my mind, like, at least my awareness of them. So, like, there's that video, which, for the longest time, I did not even remember who sang Dark Blue. I just remembered the song Dark Blue, especially the chorus. And, like, that just, like, is burned into my brain, because I've seen that video, like, 600 times. And I remember always thinking, oh, not this video again, whenever it would come on rotation. But my next memory of them is Dylan went to the same college as well, but we each went to the same small Christian college. And I took a journalism class, and then one of the students in the class, she was, like, one of the cool bad kids on campus. Like, she smoked and drank, and, like, she had a history. And, like, so she was, like, edgy. But I distinctly remember she wrote, like, this huge thing on Jack's Mannequin. Like, I guess, like, if you were interested in music, then you could, like, write reviews for the class, essentially. Mm-hmm. And I remember her reading her whole thing, and I did not know who Jack's Mannequin was, and I was just, like, imagining one of those, like... You know, like, those art supply stores where they have, like, those little model, like, people that kind of look like mannequins? I was imagining that the whole time she was reading.
You were like, that's what Jack's Mannequin is. Those
I don't
little
know
guys
why.
With strings.
That and, like,
shoulders.
The Used album cover with, like, that painted, like, face on that one cover. Like, I was just combining those two images in my head. And I was just like, I don't know who this band is. And then I never looked them up. And it was just like, it wasn't until I was like 30 that I was like, Dark Blue is Jack's Mannequin. Oh.
Jack's Mannequin is not a living mannequin modeling doll, somehow sentient and making emo music.
Marionette.
I also very much remember the Jack's Mannequin Dark Blue music video. So I feel like this is a good point to talk about that music video and that song. I always saw that it was definitely overplayed, but we also watched far too much Fuse. We'd go to our neighbor's house and just like, I remember like ringing his doorbell and banging on his door for like half an hour all the time just to make him wake up and let us come inside and watch Fuse because we had nothing else to do.
Because we were homeschooled.
Yeah.
So we're homeschoolers who went to a Christian college.
Wow, really buried the lead on that one.
And he
wrote letters to serial killers.
He wrote letters to serial killers. That was his thing.
And listened to black metal.
Yeah.
And
had a crazy, gory MySpace page.
Yeah. And lived on the internet and 4chan especially.
Yeah. Worlds collided.
Yeah.
Where is he now?
I found him recently on Facebook, but he's not very active, so I don't know exactly where he is now, but he's probably in the same state, but still doing the serial killer letters, it seems, though. Yeah. So.
Awesome.
He needs to start a true crime podcast is what he needs to do.
Appropriately has a Charles Manson profile picture. But I do remember the dark blue video very vividly because, as Justin said, it was played constantly. I remembered that it was Jack's Mannequin. I paid more attention to what we were watching.
I was just like, I don't like this dashboard song.
And I always thought it was a really cool idea for a music video. Like, it was really simple. It was all, like, one setting.
It was a dance contest.
It was the dance contest on, like, a pier. And when I say it was probably filmed in, like, Wilmington.
It's like a period piece.
And, yeah, it's like a 50s dance contest. And
Except it's got, like, his, like, 2005 haircut. Like, that straight-up, greased-up hair.
Oh, hot boy.
Yeah.
He dyed his hair black, a natural blonde, I learned. I never knew. I was so mad.
He has lighter colored hair in the other video for the mixed tape. He has like blonde hair, I think, there.
This is morning. That's when I spend the most time thinking about what I've given up. This is a warning. When you start the day, just to close the curtains, you're thinking about what I've given up.
Yeah, I watched that video and I was like, look at this hunk. No wonder he got like a really good record deal. But I also really hated this song, Dark Blue. I hated the chorus, just like the way it like rose and fell and like, I don't know, it drove me crazy. And on this record, it's still probably one of my least favorite songs on the album. It is better than my memory of the song, though. Like, I'm not like, this song's horrible. It's just like, oh, okay. I get what this song was. And like, you know, back then, listening to like hardcore bands and metalcore bands, and I was not in any way interested in what these pretty boys were singing about.
I was looking back at some of y'all's previous episodes, and I was like, have I picked the softest girl record of all time?
So when you picked this record, I was like, oh, okay, I'm curious to see what that sounds like, because I really didn't have much of a frame of reference. But saying, so in November, we did an episode on Say Anything's About a Boy.
Yes, I listened to that one.
Is the more, like, credible, music journal-y, like, accepted record, as far as, like, it's more revered than this record. That being said, I would listen to this Jack's Mannequin record over that one almost every time.
Yeah,
I liked this record way more than that Say Anything record.
Yeah, this Dark Blue definitely gave me a very different impression of what this record would sound like. I was thinking this was more of the kind of Frey indie-ish pop from that time period, which Dark Blue is very much in that lane. And I think it's, I mean, I didn't like it then, but I have definitely come around to it. And I don't think it's the worst song on this record, but it's definitely different. Like, it's the most standalone song, which it was recorded later. Like, it was written later, it was recorded later. So that makes a lot of sense. This was kind of more of a, we need more of a single song, which I thought it was interesting. This was the second single and not the first, but
It was like the third single.
Oh, yeah.
They did Holiday from Rio and the mixtape before they did Dark Blue as a single, which I could see that. If you were listening to something corporate, you would want to hear those two songs first as like easing you into the new sound. Because I was always like, what does something corporate sound like that this was such a major departure? And it's not that big of a departure, really. It's just like a little, like guitars are less crunchy is like kind of the big difference, and the songs are a little slower, more intricate, but honestly it's very much, it's like this could have just been the next Something Corporate record, but I think they were burned out and not getting along at that point.
He said he wanted to make a piano based record and like have no guitars on it. Like, he was so sick of guitars at this point that he like wanted just a piano album, which is funny because like being very familiar with it when I read that, I was like, but
yeah.
But I sure do notice, can't help but notice, a lot of guitars on this.
Yeah, that surprised me. I have a note that says, I am Jack scaling Newfound Glory riff, which was preceded by, there's actually some guitars on here. Like, it's, and I think that he should have stuck with his piano-focused aspiration with this record, because I do think that his piano playing is solid. I think it could have very easily carried most of these songs, but I don't think that it's suited to the production style, and it gets buried a lot by everything. I mean, it's a mid 2000s hop punk emo record, so everything is compressed and ganged up and limited, and it's all in that drums, guitar, bass, vocals, all in the same dynamic range, and there's not a lot of room for what a piano actually sounds like, which is a heart attack and then a decay, and it's an extremely dynamic instrument, but for the most part it's just kind of like bang 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 keyboards throughout the record. And I would have been more interested in hearing a lot of these songs played with the piano as the primary instrument and then acoustic guitar or
like a Plans by Death Cab. Like, right. That production for these songs would be so beautiful.
Right.
Like, if more of these, like, if Rescued sounded more like Brothers on a Hotel Bed, like, that is, like, the exact, I feel like that is a good call on the production, which I maybe hadn't thought about before. Because to me, it's just, like, very, like, plunky, Beach Boys-y, like, that old school, like, 60s surfy vibe. That's what the production feels like, but I do agree. Could be opened up for the piano.
I hear Beatles, like, anytime the Beatles use the piano, I hear that in this record. Especially, like, on, La La Lie, like that one kind of had like a shanty-ish beat, like an almost like a that you could hear the Beatles doing.
Mm-hmm. Made for Each Other, that same like ba-donk, donk, donk,
yeah. Donk. I kept thinking of like Vanessa Carlton too, like, and some of these just like.
Okay, the thing is, like, y'all have mentioned like The Fray and Vanessa Carlton, and I'm like, I did like them too. I have always been quite a soft girl, I'm realizing. Like, Dark Blue, the first time I heard that, I was, like, a full-body goosebump. Like, head to toe, I was one large goosebump, and I was like, this, my nerves can be soothed with music like this.
She thinks I'm much too thin, she asks me if I'm sick. What's a girl to do with friends like this? Drive a car so I can score an eighth from the lesbians out west in Venice. Oh, California in the summer. And my hair is growing long. Fuck yeah, we can live like this. But if you left it up to me, every day would be a holiday. We'd fry our brains and say it's so much fun out here.
This record like spoke to a lot of people though. Like, it did really well. Number 37 on the Billboard 200. That's like the album chart. That's great. Like,
not bad.
For yeah. Someone that, like, I don't think Something Corporate were so big of a name that Jax Mannequin was going to instantaneously going to launch off of that. If anything, I bet some of their, like, some of the more dude-based fans of Something Corporate would probably not like this record that much.
Yeah, Something Corporate was not a big enough name that Geffen would refuse to let a key member out of the contract. And that definitely made it possible for him to switch labels, because yeah. If they were anything, there's no way this would have been a Geffen record, especially with this record sounding the way it does.
Yeah, I almost wonder if he could have benefited from a maybe having a producer assigned to him by the label instead of like just doing it on his own. I mean, he had the freedom to do what he wanted on the record, I guess, but maybe be someone who did like a Frey record or a Snow Patrol record or like one of those kind of bands would have let that piano shine a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. I do think a different producer would have given it a little more focus, because I was noticing throughout the record the songs are all there. Like, he's a capable songwriter. I'm not, you know, blown away by his lyrics, and I do think it's maybe lacking on some of the melodies, but he's got the structure of songs down. Like, one of my notes says, adhering very respectably to the Tom Petty rule of don't bore us, get to the chorus. every one of these songs like hits a really strong chorus really fast. I think a producer would have just kind of scaled back some of the guitars, maybe leaned more into that theoretical sunshine pop Beach Boys influence, because you have all these little parts that show up and they're like here and they're gone. Like there's a sitar part at the end of one song, and there's a lot of acoustic guitars that pop up on a bridge, but then they're gone, or a one-off synth part. And I think those things could have been pushed forward more and been more integral to the compositions of the songs, instead of feeling like, well, we need to add another texture to the second time through the chorus. You know, the kind of thing that you go for when you have access to it in the studio, but you didn't go into it planning on doing that.
Megan, do you have a favorite song on the record?
It changes all of the time. When I first listened to it, the standout song to me was La La La. I was like, this is the most fun. It's so good. Lyrically, I liked it the most. In California, my favorite was the mixtape just for the nostalgia of it. Like, I found that to be very soothing. And also, that song rips. This is morning, you know? And that's when I spend the most time thinking about what I've given up. But my favorite song now is Bruised. When I re-listened to it the other day, I was just like, it's like, I'm very sensitive.
I've got my things, I'm good to go. You met me at the terminal. Just one more plane ride and it's done. We stood like statues at the gate. Vacations come and gone too late. There's so much somewhere I'm from. I had to give it away, had to give you away. And we spent 4 days on an island at your family's old hotel. Sometimes perfection can be, it can be perfect hell. Still count some minutes and I end up there. I swear I didn't mean for it to feel like this. Like every inch of me is bruised, bruised. And don't fly fast. Oh pilot, can you help me? Can you make this last? This plane is all I got, so keep it steady now. Cause every inch you see is bruised.
Yeah, I'd say I like the first 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 tracks the most. Like, I think the first half of the record is the strongest. Because on the backside, like, I do like MFEO, the two-parter song at the end. I didn't really care much for, like, Kill the Messenger or, like, Miss Delaney that much.
Yeah. Those were, Miss Delaney was always my least favorite, because I was like, this is just a song about cheating, maybe? Like, even as a, like, 15-year-old, I was like, I don't think I like that.
Miss Delaney was one of the songs that... Miss Delaney and Kill the Messenger are actually probably two of the songs that stand out to me as lacking that focus. Because they... Miss Delaney starts off with this, like, 70s kind of piano, soft rock. And then he mentions the Beach Boys, and they do a little Beach Boys vocal run, and then the chorus is just like standard Jack's Mannequin chorus. And Kill the Messenger kind of does the same thing. It's like, we're going to do this little Police dub reggae riff and then completely change the rhythmic feel for the chorus and go back to this is the standard Jack's Mannequin sound. It was just too back and forth between what they wanted to do.
It's funny that you did you identify with this record so much because it's a concept record about moving back to California?
I mean, I have always thought about living in LA. You know, who doesn't? You grow up watching MTV and Laguna Beach and The Hills, and like, you're watching Fuse and everyone's out there. I think it's possible that like a part of me just like felt what it would be like to live there through it and was like very into that idea. Just like the conceptual Los Angeles to a girl in San Antonio with like a very tiny bedroom who lives with three adults, like only child, like hunkered down being like, yes, and this is my future.
And so, like, guess living in LA and listening to the record, it was like, yes, I'm living the album. This is my experience now.
It was awesome. It was like being anywhere near the beach and like holiday from real. You're like, I am. It is expensive here, and I am sleeping on someone's floor, and like, I did find people to buy weed from. All of that does feel true. And like Venice, you're like, yeah, he described what it's like. But I also remember, like, on the same playlist, like, you have Ocean Avenue.
That record came out in 05, too.
Recycled all of them. Yeah.
That was another one. Yeah, it's also kind of, it's weird. So, the thing I read called it a concept album, and I was like, is the concept just his life? Because it's about, like, him moving to California after a long-term relationship ended. Like, which then he got back with her again later and they got married, I think is what happened there. So it's like, okay, it's just your life. I mean, you're just writing self-confessional lyrics. That's not really a concept record. Yeah.
The concept is these things happened to me, so I've written a song about them.
Yeah, it's just a limited thematic focus, really. It's just, I look around me and this is what I see.
Just naming the concepts.
Palm tree, beach, family.
I didn't look at the lyrics really. I didn't quite have enough time to do that because the Wikipedia of this album alone is longer than I think the whole Jack's Mannequin page. Does lyrically it hold up, or are we going, oh yeah, this is a 2005 emo records lyrics?
To me, some of the lyrics hold up. I think MFEO is a like both parts really hold up. I don't know. I mean, there's like some of that silliness, but to me, like, I can only get into music if I can like sing it. Like, I love lyrics and I love vocal melody, and to me, all of that does hold up. Like, this is a very fun album. Like, I was listening to it in entirety yesterday, and my boyfriend was like, oh, were you like rehearsing something for the show? And I was like, no, I just cannot not sing along to these songs. Like, physically, I cannot not do that.
Well, if Bad Sandy was going to cover a song off this record, which one would you pick?
Oh, man. What would be so fun to like
give it your play spin faster? Too. Yeah,
exactly. Faster and in a higher key. My shoulders are telling me that it would be Bruised, but again, I think it's just because I really liked that when I listened to it yesterday. I was like, this is hitting me right now.
Well, it's got an upbeat chorus, so that would work pretty easily.
Yeah. Physically, that seems like the one.
Yeah, I was just wondering if there was something like lyrically that it would have been like, oh no, not this guy too, like a lot of other records from the same time period.
Yeah, nothing jumped out to me listening to it that seemed like, oh, that's gross.
Yeah.
Miss Delaney is kind of sketchy.
Girl in Kill the Messenger is the only one that I'm like, what are you talking about? Yeah. And I never told you that.
I wonder if, like, is he still with his wife? Like, I wonder what she thinks of this record. If she's like, either she's gonna love it or she's gonna be like, ugh, I can't believe your most popular record is about the time period without me, you know?
I mean, I would like it if it was like, wow, you were so sad to lose me that you wrote 11 songs about it. Thank you.
That you wrote a Billboard chart topping record.
Yeah, everyone loves how sad you are about not being with me. I could also see being very pissed at that moment, like, as it's going really well, I'd be like, oh good, well, I'm glad that you moving back to California, leaving me behind to do your thing, has gone so well for you.
Yeah, I often wonder, and I have talked to Justin a lot about writing and lyric writing in the past week, really confessional stuff, I try to avoid writing. It's just, I don't know. And this time period was very bad for dudes just like pouring out everything that they maybe shouldn't have.
Yeah.
A lot of it they maybe should have tried to veil in some kind of artifice, you know, some kind of story about a breakup that's not actually their breakup story.
But like All American Rejects, I'll keep you my dirty little secret, like just out in the open. Like there were so many of these weird songs that were super popular about like being a shitty partner or like I don't like brand new songs. Like The Boy Who Blocked His Own Shot is still a song that hits for me, but I'm also like, how big of a piece of shit are you that you have to write about what a piece of shit you are? To be like, yeah, it's true. God, I am really bad.
Is that do nothing about it?
Yeah, you confess it and then you're good to go. You just say it out loud and it's forgiven.
Is that why the Warped Tour, I guess, is such like was such a toxic environment?
Yes,
because it was like all of these dudes are just like, these are the worst things about me, and you all love it. So I'm gonna continue to be a monster.
Yeah, I was 15 at a Warped Tour, and Mayday Parade was like at a signing booth, and I was like, "Will you sign my chest?" And they said no, which is good, but like, how many of me's were there looking for that? And fans were like, yeah, well, that's yeah, we could do that. We can do that, no problem. We'll see you after this. Like, there were so many teens who wanted so badly to be seen by these people who were important, but they're just guys in bands. They're just guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because teenagers cannot separate that. Like, you do realize these are just regular people. Like,
and even by my musician standards, many of them are of meager talent. Really not someone to throw yourself at.
I mean, as a kid, you don't know what is truly good either.
Yeah.
So
yeah, we're all out here and all these boys have swoopy haircuts. We're not like, well, that they should have modulated to the minor or whatever.
Yeah, he's cute and passionate.
Yeah.
That's good enough.
So it's good to know that
on stage.
Yeah.
It's good to know that Mayday Parade are woke kings, I guess, in 05. In a scene that probably was horrible. Yeah,
they did not have to say no to that.
I want to like pick a hypothetical band to mention, but then I'm also like, I don't really want to say someone if they are like good people, so I'll just avoid.
Yeah.
Brand New Guy didn't say no, I guess.
Yeah,
the only one we can like officially.
Yeah,
can't wait for his comeback. That's eventual. I guess we could talk about like the big like what happened after the record came out. Andrew McMahon was diagnosed with lymphoma, like
leukemia.
Leukemia. Excuse me.
Well, yeah, lymphoblastic leukemia.
Yeah. So like that was. It was like right after the record came out, because it was gonna be a tour in support of it that he had to cancel so he could start treatment. So like the label still put the record out, and that's probably why Dark Blue didn't really get the push until like 06, which is like after, I don't know if he was in remission fully at that point, but he was definitely like on the mend. He had like his transfusions and like a stem cell transplant, and I guess it kind of, it's one of those things, like, it gave a story to the album, even though, like, it came out, like, right after the record came out. And I remember Jack's Mannequin's name being around a lot more later, like, after this record, like, being on the front of, like, AP Mag, and I don't know if there, were the other albums, I guess they weren't as well received as this one.
I don't think so. I personally did not receive them as well as this one. I didn't dislike it. I'm looking at the Glass Passenger that came out in 08. That was pretty good. There were some good ones. I've like never gone back to listen to it, but I remember like in 2010 being like, Orphans is a nice song. But that's pretty much all it got for me. Oh, and People and Things, which I remember really not liking, with the exception of one song that I projected onto an ex-boyfriend, and that made me like the song. It's like, this is about that, and actually I do like that.
That record's funny. Dylan, you'll appreciate this. Matt Thiessen from Reliant K, like, helped write a bunch of songs for that record.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm surprised that we got this far into talking about this album, and I did not make the Reliant K reference or comparison, because that was literally the first note that I wrote for listening to this record. It was like song one, I was like, oh shit, Reliant K piano pop punk, like,
wow.
100%. Yeah, that's interesting. Matt Thiessen. I haven't tried revisiting
Reliant K.
I loved Reliant K pre mm-hmm. I liked mm-hmm, but I kind of, that was kind of it. It was, that's the piano really took over on that record. And I was getting into like drop D tuning chug wee music at that time. So it was not suited for me anymore. I haven't tried revisiting much Reliant K from that time period though. But yeah, the first three records were huge for me.
I remember like hearing some of these songs and being, you know, like, cannot stress this enough, like, lonely only child girl who doesn't understand that what she wants is to be a performer, so she's just, like, in love with all the performers. They don't teach you that, ever. You have to figure that out. It sucks. But listening to these songs and being like, oh my god, that's so sweet. He loves this girl so much, and I want someone to love me like that someday. And then learning that they're about God and being like, what?
See, that was like our entryway and like almost like a free pass to listen to whatever we wanted, was to be like, it's a Christian band. So then
with yeah. Tim and his family, like, they're very religious. And that was the thing. He was like, all the music is about the Lord. And so it's like, oh, yeah, we can take you to Reliant K concerts. That's OK.
Yeah. Matt Thiessen got in trouble in Christian circles for being spotted backstage making out with his girlfriend.
His girlfriend.
His girlfriend making out, which honestly, who knows what that was? Like, was that right. Just like kissing? Or like full on makeout? I don't trust the Christian kid Snoop.
Well, they even got in a little bit of trouble because the Marilyn Manson song, like, the my girl. Marilyn Manson Ate My Girlfriend was yeah. the song. And then, like, parents were upset because they mentioned Marilyn Manson, because the song is very much an anti-Marilyn Manson song.
Right.
Which is, like, weird in its own right. I guess it's just, like, they were more, like, worried about the content of the Marilyn Manson's music instead mm-hmm. of, like, the actual bad person he is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was looking at some of the things that happened around. So, like, after Jack's Mannequin, he just went off and started releasing records as Andrew McMahon. And then Andrew McMahon in the Wilderness kind of, like, expanded the name a little bit. I feel like none of those records, like, have the same following that this record does.
So, I don't mean to be mad at Andrew McMahon. I don't want to be. I want to love him because he's very nice. I met him 2 times when I lived in California. It was really cool. But I saw him play a very intimate show around the Billboard Awards, and it was just him with the piano and maybe like 20, 30 people in the room. And he played 3 songs off of, I think it was the 20, oh no, it was from 2017 Zombies on Broadway. And they were incredible. I was like, this is so pretty. We're like going back to a more like just piano-based Jack's Mannequin thing, because the 2015 album he put out was, it's just so produced. It's just, there's so much that doesn't sound like any real instruments are involved. And so he plays these songs and they're incredible. I'm so stoked about it. Like month or whatever later, the album comes out and these songs that were so gorgeous with just vocals and a piano are now just like, they all sound like they were made to maybe be shopped for movie trailers. Like, it's just so much of that, like, big, anthemic, but also Imagine Dragons.
He's he doesn't seem to like dwelling on nostalgia or really doing much of the older material. He so they did the 2015, they did a tour for like the 10-year anniversary of the record. It wasn't like a huge tour, it was just basically like a couple key cities and that was about it. And then this year, or 2020, they did like these drive-in shows, and it was like the album from front to back, and for the 15th anniversary. But like he even said, he's like, I don't like going back and talking, like doing the old stuff. Or he's like, I'm always moving forward. It's like, well, I mean, the thing that people connect with you the most is that record. And I understand, like, creatively, it's not super like fulfilling to be just doing the same thing over and over and over again. But you kind of have to pay a little respect to like what your fans like the most about you. So,
yeah, I mean, I just think that's how you lose a lot of people. Like, I was totally open to the idea of Andrew McMahon in the Wilderness. Like, I guess that was 2014. I listened to both of these albums in their entirety multiple times and was just like, I don't know what to attach myself to in this because it's just so much going on.
Yeah, this record in particular and the time in his life, I can definitely understand not wanting to play very many of these songs because there are a lot of songs about when you weren't with your wife. a lot of songs that were written when you were probably depressed and burned out from your band kind of collapsing and you're just trying to make yourself like making art again. And I think he said he was rarely eating. He was barely eating and like was drunk a lot. So that's not a great mental place to go back to. And then he had leukemia and had a what sounds like a brutal treatment. I mean, which I, reading that, I was like, I could not go through that treatment and then play these songs and sing these songs because they're not easy songs to sing. Like, he's way on the top of his range, and that's got to be pretty exhausting. So I have a lot of respect for him being able to play shows and tour the way he did after this record came out, after he was in remission. But yeah, I can understand not wanting to do very many, but you gotta have... gotta keep the hits at least. Feel like,
yeah.
I remember the show that he did, like 2018. He threw Dark Blue in there, I believe, or maybe it was one of the songs that was on Everything in Transit. And I remember being very surprised because it was like obviously like the last one or two, and I was just like, oh, okay, thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess he doesn't have to because it is technically a new project he's on, so mm-hmm. You know. Even though it was essentially just his project in the first place. But I think he kept the same band for the following record. Maybe Tommy Lee is not on the second album. Which is still so weird.
So weird.
Did Tommy Lee go on Warped Tour?
No, I'm sure it was someone else. I saw that Tommy Lee recorded all of his drums on this record in one day.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, for him, it was probably super easy.
Yeah.
The drumming on this record is not, like, super crazy, intricate, or anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm sure he listened to... because they had... I think they had programmed, like, some sample drums. And so I'm sure he listened to that and then just played exactly that.
Yeah.
Probably ran through it one time at home, showed up, played it on the record, and then they were done.
Yeah, I bet for him it was super easy just to crank it out, like... I wouldn't be surprised if there was like one song on here that was just like a single take. He was just like, look, I've been playing drums forever. Like,
yeah, no crazy like tempos or solos or pretty no, straightforward.
no kickstart my heart double bass drum.
Which is a shame.
Really needed more of that.
Yeah.
Sounds like a motorcycle.
Well, overall, Dylan, I like this record. I enjoyed it. I didn't care for those couple towards the end. And so the record's a little long, so I would chop maybe like one or two of those off a little bit. And you have a pretty tight set of songs right there. And I enjoyed it. I thought it was I enjoyed it more than I expected to.
Yeah.
What do you think, Dylan?
Yeah, I would kind of say the same thing. I appreciated the ambition of a lot of what they did, and I think that they could have executed it better. But overall, it was funny, like, all of my notes are really nitpicky and critical and like really technical, and then but at the end of it, listening to the record, I was like, it's a good record. Like, it's a decent record. Like, it's not something I'm going to come back to, but for it being what it is in a style that I've never been especially fond of, I think it's good. I've come around a lot on Dark Blue.
Yes.
So, yeah, I think it's, and I think that it is a record that holds up very well compared to what many other bands that he was associated with or in the same scene with from that time period.
Well, awesome.
I think it's a perfect driving on the West Coast and looking for a little cry album. Little laugh, a little cry on the PCH. This is, yep, the album.
Yep. I was going to say, just go north on the PCH from Santa Monica. It's a good record for that.
Mm-hmm.
See all the mansions in Malibu.
Oh, God, I miss the boo.
Megan, thanks so much for coming on the show and picking this record for us to talk about.
Thank you, guys. This was so fun, and I love getting to talk about songs I like.
The original version of our show is we used to just pick the records at random, and and a lot of times our guests were like, do you have anything else that we can talk about? So we were just like, how about we let our guests pick what we're going to talk about? It'll still feel random to Dylan and I.
So yeah. Gracious of y'all to do.
It's like, punish you with like a record from a band you've never heard of. They put one out this year.
Yeah. Instead, you just punish us with a list of all of these really good ones. And then you're like, do I talk about the one that's silly? Or do I talk about the one that I really care for?
Where can everyone get your music online, follow you on social medias, all that good stuff?
We're on all the streaming things, Spotify, Apple, Tidal, you know, everything except Amazon. And you can find us, all of our social media handles are Bad Sandy Bandy. And you go to badsandybandy.com. We got some videos. We've got some merchandise on our Bandcamp. And we'll be adding some more photos with alternative text so we can up our picture SEO. It would really help if you clicked those for me.
And lastly, we like to ask people to shout out any particular charities or nonprofits they personally like to donate to. Do you have any that you'd like to mention?
I like Trans Lifeline. I also like Brave Space Alliance. They're based out of Chicago. And any bail funds. Any and all bail funds. There's so many for people to look into. Think local, act global, backwards, whatever.
And we'll include links to all of that stuff in the show notes. And that'll do it for us. Again, thanks so much for doing the show.
Thank you, guys.